Hi, everyone. Welcome to Under My Host. I'm Corey. Both producers, Tyler and Porter, are with me today.
Hello.
Hello, guys. Our guest host today.
Hello.
She's jumping the gun. But Jackie Summers, founder, distiller of Sorrel in Brooklyn, New York, is joining us. Hey, Dave Stolte, artist and author of Home Bar Basics and Not So Basics, is joining us again, returning as a guest host.
Howdy.
Aaron Jimkoski, editor-in-chief of Craft by Under My Host, is joining us.
Hey.
And our guest today is Allison Patel of Bren Whiskey. She is the producer of Bren Whiskey. So, hi, everybody.
Bonjour.
Hello.
Bonjour. Oh, I love it. We have somebody, which is a total act, because, you know, Jackie told me she is just as dirty as I am. So, we'll have Aaron will be the one blushing on the show, I think, by the end of it all.
I will go on record as saying Allison Patel is one of the few people in the industry who can out curse, out swear, out drink.
Why not also get out drink?
And look good in a girl in 16 kilos while doing it.
Right, oh, wow. Pirouetting, by the way, because she is a former ballerina. Yeah, I know. No, and so everybody on the show, it was really funny. When I started to work on the outline for the show, it cracked me up because completely the Breakfast Club will not stop getting out of my head, because everybody, not that it's uncommon for craft, but everybody has come from a different area. So I know Allison, I think, was probably the only one who saw my comment that I made. And I was like, how many times can I get away with saying come in a show description? I'm like, writer come distiller, graphic designer come author. I was like, I could do this. I could keep going. But, you know, hurt me.
In all fairness, a come distiller doesn't sound all that appetizing.
But it is accurate. You're allowed to say it in this one context. You're allowed. And so, of course, you know what I had to do so I could include you in that, Aaron, is she's Hermie. She's the little wizard, come editor-in-chief. So that's, let's start talking. And Allison, if everybody doesn't know by now, Allison's a ballerina, or a former ballerina. And I don't really know the tie-in and if you were doing it this at the same time as when you were dancing, but you were doing something in jewelry before you got into alcohol production. So do you want to just touch on what you were doing before you started Bren?
Sure. Like, I think every performing artist, you kind of do anything that comes your way. So when I moved to New York, I was cleaning apartments and checking people in and out of yoga class and selling eye cream to really wealthy women on the Upper East Side. And it was fun. So, so I kind of migrated from ballet into business by way of a spa called Exhale, which when I started was just they just opened their second location in New York City, and now they're international, which is kind of cool. So one day I was doing a lot for them, and they had given me a really incredible opportunity and started to kind of teach me the ropes of business. And we had come up with this phrase, ballet, not business. So the CEO would take me under her wing and like take me into financial meetings and marketing meetings. And when they would say terms, like I understood the concept, but when they would say terms, you know, like shrinkage or things like that, that I just didn't know, I would just put up my hand and say, hey, ballet, not business, because I have a college degree in ballet or like, helpful degree anybody could ever get. Like, what kind of idiot like would take a class in kickball change?
Well, where were your parents when you took that as your major?
Getting the bill? Yeah.
They had a lot of faith in you.
They did. And my mother has kind of like politely said to me, wow, you know, like a backhanded compliment. Honey, I never thought you'd get your fame by making whiskey. So yeah, I went into jewelry, and that was that. I needed to run a business for a minute to make sure I could actually pull this thing off. So I ran this woman's business selling high end jewelry to rich people during a recession. So that was fun,
right? So how did you? Bren is actually distilled in France. By a cognac distiller, third generation cognac distiller. How did you meet him, and what was the how did the idea come up? And not only that, this has been aging for about 7 to 8 years. So was this something that they had been working on prior to you pairing up with the distiller, or was this something that you started working on all those years ago?
Awesome questions. Yeah, I did not start this from the very beginning. I kind of walked into it already aging at 3 or 4 years, max. There was a few barrels at 4 years. Most were 3 and then 2 and then 1 and on down. And I saw it as an opportunity, and it happened to be, a bigger opportunity than I had even hoped. So how did I get into it? Jeez. Years ago, I thought that, so I was falling in love with whiskey. Shout out to Suntory, because Yamazaki 18 was my very first, like, not first whiskey, but my first love affair with whiskey. That shocked me a little bit. Why, of all the, you know, good scotches that I had and bourbons and whatnot, why was it the one that really hooked me? So I went on this really nerdy path of trying to understand, was it because it was made in a different country? If so, what were they doing production-wise that was so different? All those questions kind of came up. And funny enough, and later on in life, I ended up going back to single malt scotch and going, whoa, there's a whole world I didn't explore before I found Japanese. But it kind of had like a backwards approach. So my husband was like, you know, you're just becoming a really big nerd about all this stuff. And I was like starting to like look and meet and connect with a lot of whiskey distilleries around the world, as limited as they were back in the day. And this is before people were even talking about Japanese whiskey in this country, in the U.S. So he's like, you know, you should start an import company and maybe start importing some of these whiskeys from non-traditional countries. And I thought,
which is a great idea.
Yeah, hell, I could do that. Yeah, I mean, I've never worked in the industry before.
Why not?
I can figure that out. Yeah. And the irony is, like, you know, I'll get back to how I found this guy, but, you know, as this ball started rolling, I went, holy crap, I actually now need to find an importer. And I thought, well, fuck it, I'll just become an importer. And so I did eventually set up myself as an importer. And then I met with all these distributors in New York who now are good. But when I first started and people were going, a French what? We're not interested. I thought, well, fuck them also. I'll set up my own distribution company. So I've kind of done it all, and in a very short time. And then now, thankfully, the ball has been rolling in such a big way. I've been able to back off, and now I have an importer, and I use an importer rather, and I use distributors, so I don't have to do all those hats. So I was looking for all these really kind of interesting whiskeys to import. And for me, and this is just me personally, you know, as a business model, I thought, and as a whiskey nerd, it's not enough if you just make a whiskey in a different country. If it's made in another country, but it's still, you're trying to copy scotch or mimic scotch too closely, I think that's a little bit of a waste.
Yeah.
I think the crux of innovation for world whiskeys is to try and innovate by use of terroir. And I think people are getting into it, and or things that they may have laid down are starting to come to market. But when I was out there looking, there weren't that many matured whiskeys that were even focusing on that. I mean, very few are now. So someone was like, hey, you look little, you know, weird white girl running around all these different countries trying to speak distillate language in like Japanese or whatever was thrown my way. This guy in Asia was like, you should probably go meet my friend. He's making a whiskey in France, and it's, you know, and he's a cognac maker, and I think it might kind of ring true with your philosophies. So I connect with his friend. who is now my distiller, we're talking, he's sending me some samples via FedEx, and I thought, wow, this is a bizarre little whiskey. I don't even know if this is whiskey. I gotta get to France and see what he's doing. And I get to France, and I realize the samples he had sent me were younger versions of what was even in the barrel at that time, and I liked, it was exciting to kind of taste the progression. So if I had tried a two-year-old and I got there and I was actually tasting four-year-old from the barrel, I was like, whoa, this actually has a ton of potential. So I'll never forget, we were sitting in the Rick house, and I said to him, you know, this is really fascinating, and I started to learn his production process. So I said, well, you know, what are you doing with all this whiskey? You know, can I see your bottle? There's like, yeah. But that's exactly what he said. He just looked at me and he goes, I drink it.
So they were making it, right? Well, so they were making it for their family, right? So this is so you guys know we've done a cognac show before. So the agricultural product involved in cognac production, they're grapes or are grapes. Right. So they were growing for cereal for production, for manufacturing organic barley. And I guess wasn't that, and then they decided they would go ahead and just make whiskey with it. Rather, I don't know if they were doing it in addition to or in lieu of, but decided that they would take that barley that they were growing on their estate and distill it.
Yeah, they're just like the grower champagnes in cognac. You've got all these little. I mean, you're exactly right, Corey. But and to that point, I will add, you have all these little grower or farm distilleries that produce cognacs for the big houses. So Hennessy, I know for, you know, they don't produce their own cognac, but they are master blenders, and they have access to all these beautiful little farm distilleries, and they'll have, you know, 20, 30-year contracts with a lot of these that have just been renewed over generations. So a lot of these little houses, some more so now, are just starting to put out their own labels, but many of them don't. This particular family has no interest in putting out their own label. So they set up their distillery in the early 1900s, and it is a farm distillery. They grow their own grapes for their cognac production, but they do so organically. And so their method of organic production or organic farming is by crop rotation. So in their land, it's, you know, field, vineyard, field, vineyard, field, vineyard, in alternating plots. And in the fields, they rotate certain crops through every year. So barley is just one of the crops that they have been growing, and it just kind of moves around their land. So yeah, they were, you know, as a extra income source, they were selling it. The last generation was selling it to an organic cereal manufacturer in France. And this guy was like, well, hell, we're selling all of our cognac. We got nothing to drink. We have whiskey and a spill and barrels. I think we've got something here.
When you approached this man, did he think that this was a great idea? Was this something that he was hoping would happen, or were they just expecting to create this stuff for themselves and just enjoy it and, you know, give it to their family and their friends? Was the goal to start producing this on a commercial level?
No, okay. not that I've been able to extract. I was asking them if it was something that they would be interested in, you know, developing further. And they said, well, we'll only make it for you. And I said, yeah, that sounds good. but we take it a step further. So they have been shockingly amazing and kind and excited by this whole process. They let me come in and start to get my hands into barrel management with them, really set the tone for the direction of the whiskey, because it really didn't have a direction. It was just kind of being made. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll say that as it was being made in the most spectacular of ways, but they don't know the whiskey industry. They didn't even know that what they were doing was as different and special as it is.
I love that. That's awesome. I mean, literally, when you think about, in a lot of the production of whiskeys, like in these small areas, it is just out. They, or, you know, like the one, like what we've talked about, when they start distilling other fruits, they just happen to have these other fruits on their property. And I love that this is just like, it just happened. You know, I love that it was so unintentional. I think that's great. And that they were just making this with love and care, because I'm sure that's how they make their cognac.
Exactly. Like
I just love that you can actually pronounce the word terroir. Can you say that again for me?
The double R's. Oh no, he's in trouble.
Terroir. W-A-R. I think that was those letters.
Do you guys, Dave or Aaron, or Jackie? Jackie probably knows more about this, or just knows just about as much as Allison does. But do you guys have any questions that you want to ask?
So how much time do you actually spend over there and involved in production?
I don't spend enough time over there. I don't think anyone spends enough time in France.
Very true.
All I'm saying is I think we need to travel with Allison when she goes there for bottling. We need
idea.
Right? We need to have a little girls' trip, and somehow, girls'
carry
trip.
The luggage.
You have to remember that craft has become, well, I guess Mika won't appreciate this. It's because it's like a girls' thing, which I never expected. But we're just a bunch of ladies. No, I would love to see how all of this happens. I think it's very cool. And you're getting, you know, of course, people would probably be clamoring for these barrels, and they just happen to have them because this is what they have been using for years and years and years on their own property. I think it's such a cool, you know, like to be able to get awesome. This consistent barrel over and over for your whiskey. You don't have to like go knocking on doors, especially with the right. kind of, because these are like top barrels that they're using.
Yeah.
What can you tell everybody the wood and that you guys are aging in, you know, the different types and how that works?
So the whiskey starts for the first, so it sits in oak about 7 to 8 years. And just to point out, the expression that's on the market right now, Bren Bren is the name, but a state cask is kind of this specific bottling. Not that anyone even needs to use that right now, since there is not another expression on the market, but but this particular one, a state cask, is a single cask release.
Mm-hmm.
So I do bottle each barrel individually. And the kind of interesting twist on that is I'm doing a double barrel maturation. So that means that, so if it's, you know, sits in the barrel for 7 or 8 years, the first 5 years, it starts in new French Limousin oak, and then I finish it in XO cognac barrels. The Limousin.
Do those barrels have a light char on them?
No. Limousin is a wood that's cut from the Limousin forest in France. And when you think about bourbon, which has to age in new American oak barrels, for a distiller, those barrels would start at about $80. You can go up to, you know, 150 or whatever. You can go up, you can climb up in those numbers, obviously, if you do yard aged versus kiln dried or whatever. But they typically start at about $80 per barrel. Mine start at 12 to 1500 euros per barrel.
Right.
It's a different game.
Well, we learned on Dan Farber's show, who, you know, he's an American brandy distiller, that the wood in France has more tannins than the American oak, right, Aaron? Wasn't that what Dan said to us? That
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, that they need to char and you get those flavors from doing that, but they don't need to do that if, I'm happy to be corrected if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that so when you talk about like the colors and the flavors that come off of it, there is a lot, there's more tannins in the wood and the barrels that they're making in France than here.
Yeah, it's a totally different ballgame. And that's kind of the exciting, nerve-wracking, you know, whatever direction you want to go in aspect to doing an aged spirit. It's like, you know, you finally figure out the right yeast strain, the right days or hours for your fermentation times, you know, the right grain source, and now you've got to lay it down into a barrel and look at how many species of oak there are, and you don't know how long that first batch is going to need to sit. You know, it's not like you go into this going, I think this whiskey is going to take 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't get that.
Right.
You just got to keep trying it. So choosing your oak is a really, like I said, yeah, scary or exciting part. But, I mean, French oak gives a lot of kind of vanilla, clove, cinnamon aspect. Limousin, which is the varietal that I'm using, is a really elegant species. It has very fine grain. So excuse me. So you get a lot more contact with the wood because the grains are so fine, if that makes sense. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of kind of room for the whiskey to go up and breathe and play around with the wood.
You could just keep talking. We're going to drink. I'm starting. Brand is starting to hit.
Yeah, it's good.
I just want to say something about Allison here, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
The craft is problematic. Craft is problematic because everybody wants to do a whiskey. But whiskey, basically the theory is if you want to do a good whiskey, you need to put it in a cask and then put your kids through school.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is you could have a kid in high school at the moment from the time you started thinking about this, Allison.
Yeah.
What most people have done is put out white whiskeys, which is hard to compete with, mm-hmm. truthfully, given the nature of what the giants can do. Allison had the vision to go ahead and start doing this years ago.
Right.
So she could hit the market with a product that was finished and ready and mature, and she didn't have to have a filler product in the interim.
Right.
So I think it's just visionary what she's done.
I love you, Jackie.
I know. I did put Allison's biggest cheerleader on the show. I'm like, I could really probably let him do the show. But how did you two meet? And really, it seems you guys are really, you know, and I mean this in the in the best possible way. You really do feed off each other. You seem to, you're both in New York, and it seems like a lot of cocktails are being made with your spirits, and you guys have such a strong relationship. How did you guys meet, and how are you guys working together a lot to promote your respective brands? And I'm just really curious about the backstory there. Really, Allison, I saw, you know, we may have been, you know, friends and known each other through social media before, but Jackie really was the person who said to me that I needed to talk to you and get to know you. I think we already were in touch with each other or connected, but he was really pushing from you gunning last year when I first started talking to him. So good on you, Jackie.
But Jackie's amazing.
Yes.
I'll let him answer how we met, because it's kind of a funny thing through his perspective. But I will say, and he and I talk about this all the time, you know, we're very blessed in that we found kind of kindred spirits in this nutty industry.
Mm-hmm.
And we've really become siblings, and we'll send each other little messages. He's like, "Hey, sis." I'm like, "What's up, Sib?" You know, it's like, have a support system. And there have been journalists now who started talking about it, how wild and kind of wonderful it is that we have become so close as people, and also our products marry so beautifully.
Oh,
and when
goodness.
Brought together, they kind of create their own third, you know, profile, flavor profile, and combination when they're added together. It's really cool.
So Leslie Townsend is the founder of the Manhattan Cocktail Classic, and I think mm-hmm. she's one of the smartest people in the industry. And she is a dear friend of mine. And when Allison was thinking about doing the 2012 Cocktail Classic, Leslie introduced us with the idea that we had similar sensibilities, and Allison and I met, and it was sort of like, oh my God, are we best friends now? Yes, we are. Seriously. You know, craft is funny because you have a lot of people who are coming from very different backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing very different things. And while we all try to support each other, there are clearly some folks that you just click with because you share these sensibilities. And from how she, you know, from how she went about this, getting this product to the market, to the actual product that's in the bottle, to, she didn't even tell you the story about Brand Blue. You'll have to tell the story at some point. We just had a similar point of view. And I will tell you, and I mean this in all sincerity, Allison tells out of her goddamn mind. If you have any idea how incredibly hard she works, and she doesn't see anything as impossible. And the days when I feel like staying home and playing with my cat and watching Archie reruns on repeat and drinking Grin out of a bottle all day, I think to myself, shit, she's out there working the market right now. I actually had, we had a blizzard over the winter, and she planned on doing like door-to-door market.
Well, I saw the pictures. She's like taking pictures, and there's piles of snow taller than her out on the roads.
Yeah, you gotta do it.
And you get some little wristbands made up. What would Allison do?
WWAD.
She listens to her older brother, Jackie.
But I love, you know, it's, and again, you know, I say this all the time. My love for craft beer beyond the beer is the camaraderie that brewers have, and you guys are the closest example of that same type of camaraderie, and I love that because you don't see, and I'm sure it has a lot. You have beautiful products, but they're not in direct competition with each other. They, right. Of course, like you say, they marry beautifully, but they stand on their own and they work with other things. But I would love to see other people working the way that you guys work and really just championing one another, because, you know, like I said, you know, he was looking out for, I mean, and I love that. I don't even know if we had done your show yet, Jackie, but you were already, you know, just looking out for her and saying, hey, you should keep an eye out. And I do see that a little bit more, but I would love to see distillers doing that more and more, because you don't see that enough.
I'm in Boston today at the Martignetti tasting, and I will tell you that one of Allison's brand ambassadors was stationed literally right next to the variety. It didn't surprise me in the least, but I spent as much time today talking about Grin to customers as I did talking about Sorrel.
Oh my God. Jackie, you got a case coming your way.
I was just going to say, the invoice is in the mail. Like.
I couldn't do this if I didn't completely believe in it. I was raised.
Yeah.
I've been drinking whiskey since I was 13, and truthfully, I've fallen out of love with it.
And hey, but Jackie, Grin, if you made a whiskey, I would support the hell out of it, by the way.
In order for me to make a whiskey, like, it'd be released when I was 60.
Right.
it takes vision. It takes real vision to do this.
Yeah.
I didn't have that vision. My vision was different. So I really give credit where credit is due here.
Yeah, but you're breaking the way for a totally different kind of product.
Yeah.
There's nothing like yours on the market. I had a community at least to walk into, whether they shut the door or not.
Like you, I'm out of my mind.
Yes.
I can attest to that. You have to be slightly crazy to push yourself when, especially when you're doing something somebody else hasn't done before, because you have to be
slightly crazy. You have to be fucking nuts.
Wait a minute. Wait. No, you know, it is one of those. I do know, you know, you teeter on that. You know, you have to really believe in what you're doing, because you have to be prepared that there's going to be people that will fight you to tell you that what you're doing is stupid and wrong and a waste of time. And, you know, for the most part within the industry, I never hear that. I hear that a lot from people outside of the industry. So I have to just focus on, but it's got to be the same, you know, when you're like, I'm going to make this whiskey, or, you know, especially the approach that, although Allison, what you're doing is very different from any of the sourcers. Like, you're working directly with the distiller. So I love this. This is really a completely different approach. You'll always get people that have a problem with the sourcing. You're bringing to market something that would not have gone to market, but it's being created by people who know what they're doing. It's made with the same love and care that any other craft distiller would do. But they probably, it wouldn't have, I'm sure, made it to the States. Not unless, you know, some larger importer had somehow, you know, come across these people. But I love how you're doing this, of care, whether it was just fortuitous that you met the people the way that you did. I think it's really, really great. And I love that you're the first one to do this. I mean, it is, you are breaking new ground.
I really thank you for that. And I also, I have a tendency to often downplay my role in the production side of this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, I don't think this is not an ego project for me, or else it would be named Allison and not mm-hmm. Bren.
Mm-hmm. What does Bren mean, by the way? What is Bren?
It's a spinoff of a French word, Bren, which means grass and twigs, or at least it does in my broken French. And
so the terroir, is that where it speaks to the?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I tried to make a joke in French the first time I saw the barley growing with my distiller. And, you know, when you joke in another language, it doesn't always work.
Especially with the French.
And so we get out of the car and I was looking, it was winter and I was looking at the barley, which looked like grass because it was growing still.
Right.
And the vineyards, you know, these grapevines, these huge vineyards flanking this massive barley field. And they just looked like twigs on like wires, on horizontal wires. And I tried to joke with him, like, I get out of the car all the way from New York, and I'm like, what the hell? Like, you take me to see grass and twigs, I want to see barley and grapevines. Right. Oh my God. You're an American, you don't understand agriculture. That's so funny. But I did want to just say on the production side, I mean, when I came into this whiskey, I am the farthest thing from a sourced whiskey because...
Yes.
You know, I found it and I would kind of discovered it. I mean, this guy really had no intention of ever selling it or coming to market. When I met with him and we kind of came to this agreement, the whiskey was only at max 4 years old, just sitting in new French oak barrels. And there was no direction. This was, you know, to these barrels. And it's not the easiest thing to do barrel management. And so it was my vision that brought in, that, you know, started integrating the usage of the XO cognac barrel.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them wet. I wanted them fresh. I know in Scotland, when you use a port or a sherry barrel, either for finishing or for the full maturation period, they empty those products in Spain. They dry out the barrels, often break them down, ship them over to Scotland, build them back up, and then put the whiskey into. You're getting a dry sherry barrel, which still imparts a lot of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, here's a whiskey that I was able to get in on, like, you know, after it started maturing. It's grown from, or, you know, made from two heirloom varietals that are grown right there in Cognac at this distillery. We're using their proprietary yeast strain. He does an alembic still distillation, and it started in new French oak. I was like, let's finish this with the full story. Let's try cognac barrels. It hasn't really been done, not in this way. You know, I mean, if there's been a cognac barrel release on a single malt before, it's been like a one-off barrel. But let's really explore this as an option. And I really saw it once I got the whiskey up to 5 years old, a couple of them were up to six, but majority up to five, and I started moving into the cognac casks. I thought, well, you know, typically when you finish a whiskey, it's done so in 3 to 6 to 9 months. So I happily quit my job 2 years later. Whiskey.
Peace out, bro.
But, you know, and I share that not to give myself, you know, innovative credit here, but you know, I am extremely involved in the production, whether or not it's nice. My hands that are stirring the fermentation tanks or whatever. But I am, I mean, I live and eat and sleep and breathe this whole thing to life. So
yeah, which is even more interesting because I really thought that they were just putting the whiskey in their own casks. I didn't. So that was something that you introduced. That was an idea that you introduced to the distiller to finish.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Hell yeah.
That's
and
awesome. It's a little, you know, it's interesting to propose a change to a French artisan. And mm-hmm. I was thrilled with how well it went off. And he was like, okay, you know, he's like, he's cool. He'll call me and leave me messages on my voicemail. And he's like, cause he's so shocked that this has worked. And he calls me and he goes, Alison, wow, big sales, whoa.
That's fantastic.
I'm here to need wine.
Yeah, right.
I always joke. I'm like, you're not still drinking this at your family parties, right? Like,
right. Don't drink the whiskey. You're gonna have to start distilling something else. So, and I believe, and I'm almost positive, and I apologize. I believe that I cut off Erin when she was asking how long, or I guess how often you're going to France and doing this. So you'll have to go and I guess and taste the barrel, see if they're ready. If not, you schedule a trip to go back and sample them again throughout the year. Is that how this is working?
Well, yeah, this is the beautiful thing about modern day. There are international shipping companies.
When do you schedule your trips? How often are you visiting France?
I go about once a year.
Mm-hmm.
I sadly, for my own personal, love of France, I have not been since I launched Bren, which was October 1st, 2012. But I will be there for a few weeks in May again.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to that. But before that, I was going about once a year.
Okay, so we can't swing May, Erin. It'll have to be the next year.
You're going to need IT support, right?
Yes.
Right. We'll record a show over there.
I will carry luggage.
I'll drink.
Yes.
It's going to be quite a party.
Allison, are they transporting unbottled Bren whiskey to the States and you're bottling here? Are they bottling abroad?
No, I bottle in France.
And how many bottles are you releasing in a year?
Awesome question. It is a limited, all whiskey is limited by age and whatever they put in the barrel. Mine is further limited by the fact that we only make it once a year after we harvest the barley. So I'm at my max, I'm laying down 30 barrels a year. On average. So that's essentially, if in case counts, like in 9-liter case counts, it's essentially 2,000 cases in this country every year.
Nice.
I have committed all of that to the U.S. My importer has agreed and committed with me, because I have been thrilled and shocked at the international interest in this whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, first and foremost, my very initial vision on this was to find, and I like that I'm now a producer. That was kind of an added dream, or rather a dream that I didn't think was necessarily attainable, but to bring in these really cool whiskeys into this country, because if you ever go to France and you see at certain stores, or you go to London and you see at certain big whiskey retailers what they have access to versus us, a lot of it due to the fact that things are bottled in 70 cl versus 750s.
Mm-hmm.
But it's totally unfair as a whiskey drinker. I just think it's wrong. So I have gotten weird emails from people and they're like, you could really build a brand if you just sold it here in London. And I was like, that's such a backwards way of saying that you want it. Thank you.
Right. Well, the worst thing that you're ever going to hear is that people want what you're making. And you're in such a good, to be in a position to say not now or not ever is such a, I have actually a lot of questions to ask you, but I want to ask this one. And then I want Dave, who I hopefully is still with us.
Dave.
I'm just thinking my friend whiskey and
right. And I should say, we have been drinking it, and honestly, Allison, I made sure that we had several bottles of beer because I knew that we would tear through your whiskey.
Yes. It's really good.
And I was worried. I'm like looking at my guys, I'm going to start cutting people off because we're not going to be able to function past a certain point. So I have to make sure that they're getting the liquids that they need to sustain themselves through this hour long program.
We're only like a third of the way through the bottle.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
The second one.
But I want everybody to ask their questions, but now, because this is a single estate, single malt whiskey, how do you increase production? Can you not increase production? Are you targeting for in the future to be able to expand outside of the US market or be able to increase your reach in the US market? I think, I love how you're doing this, but I guess you really are very limited. With the time frame, with small production, reaching more states, more countries. So what is the plan, and where are you available right now in the U.S.?
Ooh, I have to look that up.
Well, what we can do, we can direct people. Is it on your website?
It is drinkbren.com.
Yeah, so everybody go and check if you're interested. It is delicious, and we can start. We'll talk specifically about the whiskey shortly.
This time last year, Allison was delivering cases of Bren on City Bike.
I love it.
Yes. That is a true story.
I remember the comments about it.
Wow.
It was hilarious and fun because City Bike is blue, so that coordinated.
Didn't you say you missed? She was actually, I think, made a comment that she missed delivering by bike. I don't know if that's...
this industry is so weird because, you know, Jackie and I, right, we make these products, but then I have to sell it to an importer. So that's like one step away. And then we have to sell it to distributors. And then they have to sell it to stores or bars.
You want to still feel connected.
And then they have to sell it to the end consumer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so far removed sometimes. Yeah. So I like delivering. And then I literally show up at a bar with a case of whiskey and then an open bottle in my bag. And I would literally sell it out of my, not to patrons, you know, but like to the bar. And then I'd be like, well, shit, I'm here. You just bought, you know, the rest of the case that I've been walking around West 10th Street with. I've got an open bottle in my bag. Do you mind if I pour some people a little taste? And then I'll just direct them to you to buy a glass while I walk out. they were just awesome.
I'm guessing you're most widely available in New York, since that's home for you and that's where first
I'm
kicked
now
off.
I'm 21 states.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Very nice.
Wow. That's amazing. And you're doing what? How many cases did you say? 2,000 cases in a year?
Oh, wow. 2,000, that's a 9-liter case count, but I bottle in 6-packs.
Right.
So I essentially have 4,000 6-packs, which is small and a lot all at the same time.
Well, considering how much you guys are producing,
Is it available in Georgia?
This time next year, I'm sure we'll be.
She just launched
Georgia,
in Georgia.
Yeah, you have it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can I add that to my liquor cabinet?
Yeah!
You have gained a customer.
Thank you. Well, shit, I'm done. Good night.
Yeah. Right, thanks, everybody.
Like, mission accomplished. Peace. I got other shit to do.
No, but my hope and the way I kind of see this rolling out in the future is that it'll probably be on allocation maybe by even this time next year, or definitely probably by this time the year after. That's my thought. So, I mean, that's the tricky thing with something limited. You have to get out there and you've got to keep your price at least accessible. I mean, I make zero money from this business yet. But that's okay, because I said we've got such an approachable whiskey.
But won't you have to at some point? I mean, like, you're working really hard. Will you, once you have a foothold, won't you need to? I mean, you're going to need to increase your price so that you can make money off of all the work you're doing.
That definitely has to happen.
Yeah, right.
One of the tricky parts about craft that no one tells you is the first 2-3 years, everything, you can make $1 million. And Allison will make $1 million just to break even.
Yeah.
Ouch. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just, and it just goes right back into the business. Because people forget that, you know, it's like, okay, well, I can establish my price for the year, but I'm so small that I can't even confirm my cork price is going to stay consistent for the year, or
exactly.
My glass.
Like, there's so many. You have, there's so much that's not fixed as far as your expenses go.
Right. And even, you know, seeds.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah.
Okay. So it's weird. It's, you know, it's just the economics of the business.
Right. Well, I mean, and you're making a beautiful product. I can't imagine. It's being very well received. If nothing, every month, not even every month. I think every week you're written up by somebody else. You and Jackie are going to get more press than anybody I know. And it's funny because a lot of times in completely different areas, they're both included in the same write ups, which I think is really funny. And these guys are small. They don't have PR firms like pumping their shit for other, you know, it's like their products on their own merit are getting the attention that they're getting, which is.
As it should.
Yeah.
It's good.
Definitely.
Very good.
Oh, yeah. Word of mouth, you.
Well, I mean, when you're doing something good, especially in this industry, I mean, there's a lot, you know, look, I try not, I don't feel like we don't really talk to people who are making the products that are not worth talking about. they're out there. There's plenty of them. You know, an interesting story is extremely important, but a great product is right. the most important thing. So yeah, I mean, they're putting out really great products, so people want to talk about it. Although I have to go, like, did y'all notice that one of the write-ups that you got, everything was really incredible, and then I'm totally going to throw the product out there, but that Fireball was on there. What the fuck? Fireball. I'm like, was that just like, was somebody throwing a bone?
Was
mass
it the
product?
Organic Fireball?
I don't know. I was like, all these beautiful products were on this list. And then somebody would have been like, oh, Fireball's the shit. You know, I don't know. I'm like, I was really surprised. I thought, like, how did that make the cut?
You missed the part where they're like, the reason why we're mentioning them is because they nailed the candy flavor.
Or they placed an enormous ad in our bag.
I do like that Fruit Loop flavored vodka, let me tell you. It's good.
No, I mean, Fireball does taste exactly like the candy.
I'll give it that, yeah.
It's like they liquefied the candy and mixed it with...
And it's very possible. It could have been like, he will go unnamed with one of my writers. It could have been the equivalent of Skittles vodka. Aaron knows who I'm talking about.
Oh, it will.
But no, seriously though, Skittles vodka? Seriously.
Bro, I always like Skittles so much.
So good. Dave, do you have anything that you would like to talk about or ask? Or
hello, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
I've had all this time to enjoy this whiskey while you chat. It's amazing.
Isn't it?
You're wasted right now, aren't you?
I'm on my way.
It's really, you can't stop. So good.
If you are going to draw, and if everybody knows, Dave Stolte does these amazing caricatures of cocktails and creates a personality for different people that are well-known in the industry. What cocktail would you create for Allison? What would her caricature be?
Not to put you on the spot or anything.
No, I'm totally putting him on the spot.
That's a tough one. I mean, it have to be. I can't imagine. I know it's probably possible to make a cocktail.
I know, but you just want to drink it neat. Yeah,
I wouldn't want to. It's so interesting on its own.
Right.
So would she be like a little? Yeah. She'd be like a glass with her little blue label
on
it.
Yeah, a little whiskey glass among the
little blue hat
and grass.
There you go.
With a pair of like point shoes in the background.
Exactly. But they must be that blue. They're really pretty.
Here's my
blue.
My favorite recent Gwen story.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago, my girlfriend sleeps like a rock, and I'm a wicked insomniac, so I'm always up before her. So I've been up for a few hours, and finally she got up and I kissed good morning, and she said, "Do you have bananas for breakfast?" I said, "No, I had some bran." Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Bran. True story.
True. It's what's for breakfast.
Well, isn't mouthwash? It has some alcohol in it, so why not?
It's 80%, which is I mean, I could tear through that bottle one day.
Easily.
Straw.
We could all tear through that in like an hour.
So, Jackie, what is your favorite Bren and Sorrel cocktail?
2 parts Bren, 1 part Sorrel, let it sit.
Any ice? A twist of something?
No.
No?
No ice, maybe an orange peel, but that's it.
Can we make that happen?
Not today, we can't.
Oh, damn it.
I am making that right this second.
Oh, wow. Boo.
He said 2 parts Sorrel, right? 1 part?
No.
Yeah.
Two parts Brand.
Two part Brand, 1 part Sorrel, just let it sit.
Yes.
And then, that sounds really good. I could do that. Those are my good favorite type of cocktail. Well, there's no, I can't do. I actually had said to him, I was like, I really enjoyed Sorrel the first time around.
Oh my God, Sorrel is amazing.
Yes, it's
delicious, neat. And of course, like, I don't want to get, you know, this was one of those products that, you know, we were very lucky to try. Jackie, of course, is growing at an alarming rate like you are, but, not a lot of people have tried it. Erin hasn't tried it. And so I'm trying to introduce her to a lot of products that I've had that I love. And this was definitely one of them. And I can't wait for her to try it. It is one of those things that in the winter, it's amazing. In the summer, it's amazing. It just, it works warm. It works cool. Yeah, it's delicious. And it tastes like nothing else. When you get excited, because I'm not a salesperson like you guys are. I don't believe you guys are salespeople. You can get excited and talk about something that you love and you believe in, but it's not a sales pitch.
Right.
You're just talking about it. And it's the same, you know, what, you know, I love and I definitely want to talk to you again in the future, Allison, about craft and some other stuff. But I love having an opportunity to work with everybody again, because you get excited about people and you want everybody to know about them. And I'm definitely excited about Bren, excited about Sorrel, and of course,
you.
Dave Stolte. I'm excited about you. You know, everybody that on my journey doing what I've been doing for the past 2.5 years, I look forward to working with again in a completely different way. But we will be talking to everybody again, I'm sure. Do you guys have any questions that you want to ask Allison before we sign off? No?
No.
Ty, really? Did you want to do that? You want to give her like that cult? Would you like to give her the, I just want you to know that I love your product more than anything. Ty is very cute. He's always got to like give it. He's like, this is the best. Go ahead. You know you want it.
It is really good.
It is good.
I mean, I already told her that I was going to go buy it.
You already did it.
It's actually a very sexy bottle too.
Thank you. That's, yeah, there's a lot of little details. I mean, that whole bottle, there was nothing that was put on for a marketing reason. It all tells the story of France, of where I'm making it. So like the blue that Jackie was asking me about earlier, that's actually the color of the doors on my distillery.
Oh, cool.
And those scrolls and even the B and the logo were inspired by this iron gate that I'd seen on the property that I thought was so spectacular. So we kind of brought some of this wrought iron work into the label.
Cool.
Even the barcode is too narrow.
Yeah, I really like that.
That was clever.
Yeah.
Nice. What barrel do you have? What do you? Yeah. What
265.
Nice. That was only my 15th barrel.
Oh wow.
There was a really bizarre misunderstanding, French and you know versus this is the problem when you do production in another language. my label designers, who are a New York based firm, which are like the best guys ever, as a holding place for the barrel numbers, they use 250 as a number that didn't mean anything to anybody, but just to see what it would look like with numbers in it. And when I got my very first batch of Bren, I flip it over and I was like, why does it say 251?
Oh, so it's not really.
And they were like, Alison, you had 250, so we started there.
Which is so funny, because it makes me think of like counter checks. You know, like when they start checks, nobody ever wants to start at zero.
Right.
I was like, 15, or her 15th barrel. Oh, they didn't want to start at zero. No, that's very, I think that's awesome. That's really,
it was really silly.
So it's not near, just translation. Something got lost.
Translation. Also, like on my very first batch, the date of bottling said MMDDYY. Because
right,
again, the company printing the label.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're like, we don't do our dates that way, so we just left the letters in.
Right, because they go day, like, they go day, yeah, month, year.
Right.
Right, and I was like, but that's very unhelpful. You should have told me.
You couldn't work that out for yourself, fellas?
Nah, let's do 1,000 labels like this. It'll be fine.
Because that makes sense.
That's great.
But, I was going to say, should we say one thing just about the taste so people know,
yes,
what they're,
please,
kind of getting,
yes,
into?
Absolutely.
Right, we're just like, it's just delicious. Absolutely.
Yes. You're gonna go with
yum. You know what? Why don't...
I want
you to tell people about it, but why don't we let Dave, since he's been so quiet. Dave, what does it taste like to you? And of course, Allison, on the heels of that, you know.
You know, it really... The first taste really surprised me with how... well, the nose was really fruity and sweet.
Like apricot to me.
I got all kinds of weird things like marzipan and pears and pineapple. And
yes,
and then
pears.
My initial sip was mineral and chalky, but then it goes through caramel and it finishes back sweet.
Cool.
It's intriguing. I taste new things every time I sip it.
Awesome. That's the idea.
And Aaron, we'll let you pretend like you've been tasting this all along. Poor Aaron.
Oh, you know, I got exactly
same.
Aaron is not.
He's got a great palate.
Aaron, you will try this soon. Trust me. It really is. And definitely when you said the pear, but I get kind of like that. I don't know. And I always want to say, like, why can't I think of the, like, the stone fruits? Like, right. That was the first, but yeah, definitely pear. But it's fruity, but it's not sweet.
Right.
And it's really soft.
Yeah, which it is really soft.
Yeah, it's really, really lovely. Now, Allison, would you like to give us your producer tasting notes for bread for listeners that if they're not familiar and they're, and you know, just before they go and pick up a bottle, they should know what they're getting. Exactly.
Just a case.
I love you all.
The biggest thing I will say is because it is single cask release, you will pick up different notes per different barrel. So in terms of specific barrel tasting notes, it's a little bit harder. However, I feel like my philosophies on taste is, you know, what tastes like chocolate to me is not necessarily chocolate to someone else, because I might be thinking cacao and like raw cacao nuts, and someone else might be thinking milk chocolate.
Right.
But to kind of give people a general idea, in every bottle, no matter which barrel, to me, Bren is a very fruit forward. You nailed it. And I like that you said it's not that cloying sweet. So people,
right.
Sniff it, and some people can, you know, immediately go to sweet, but I don't think it's sweet. I think it's deeper than that. I think it's very fruit forward. I think it's very floral. And Dave, I think you're right on the palate. You get this really cool, creamy, kind of delicious. It does take you through kind of a melodic song while you sip it. To me, the signs of a great whiskey is what you smell, you get on the palate, and then some. So I think it should change while it's in your mouth, and it should also change while you're sitting and sipping. It should evolve. But I think on the palate, it's also very creamy, almost like there's creme brulee notes to me and kind of banana foster. And sometimes, like, some barrels have this chocolate-covered orange peel to me. And the pear is a really interesting note. I totally agree with that. I'm actually going to go dig out that bottle that you're drinking and revisit that. All these tasting notes are making me hungry. I did a really cool photo shoot with Edible Manhattan once, and she's like, you know, this is such an expressive whiskey that they wanted to shoot the actual, like, all the whole foods of the taste that you get. So we had, like, star anise in there and black peppercorns and clove, bananas, oranges, honey, you know, like cream. Vanilla beans. It was really cool. Kind of cool to see.
It is
very cool.
It's really, really good stuff.
Yeah, it is.
My tasting notes are yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Best ever.
Those are my boys.
Also, like you mentioned, that each cask is going to be different. So, listeners, you have to buy a lot.
Yeah.
You're going to want to.
Think of it like trading cards.
Yeah,
just collect
well,
them
it's
all.
And it's. I mean, and that's, you know, the difference between, you know, aged spirits and not, you know, like with. I mean, and when you talk about craft, when every year with an agricultural product, there should be. And to me, when it doesn't change that much, I'm very curious what they're doing that it doesn't taste different.
Yeah. Right.
To me, it's like the beauty of wine and the beauty of craft beer and craft spirits. That those even if they're the slightest change, it's so it kind of just keeps it interesting, and you pay attention when you drink because you want to you know, when you fell in love with something, like, what is it different this time, and
right.
do I like it more, is there something different that I taste. I love the just those slight differences every year, and Erin's a wine drinker too. I'm sure she feels, you know, the same way. I mean, that's, you really do pay attention when you're drinking products like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's what makes it fun. Not to be the asshole that, you know, sits around going like, I'm picking up this, but just, you know, when you're sitting there and just kind of like in your own head, you know, picking up those. I mean, even just by yourself, it's really nice, and it does make it fun. I mean, that for me is why I love barrel aged spirits. I think it was just a real natural to go from wine to drinking whiskeys, tasting and picking up from bottle to bottle, from, you know, the same producer from year to year. That's a lot of fun. But Allison Patel, Bren Whiskey, your whiskey is fantastic, and
yes.
Yep.
Look forward to trying more of it, and to, you know, and talking to you again in the future. Jackie Summers, Sorrel, Brooklyn, whoop, BK. No, It was great having you back on, Jackie and Dave. Absolutely. It was great. Dave, you were awfully quiet.
Yeah. You were quiet, Dave.
I was entranced. You can't blame me.
No, I know. If you have the product sitting in front of you, I mean, come on.
You're like, I passed out for like the first half hour. Dave, you know, it's cool, though.
Dave Stolte, what is your website address? Just let everybody know, and we'll tell them that they need to check out his Home Bar Basics. Yes. It's a fantastic.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
Homebarbasics.com. Mm-hmm. And you got the books now, right?
We got the books. You know, I have the books. The books are for something else that we're not mentioning on the show. That I got.
Wink, wink.
Dave, can I buy your book online?
Oh, you know what? Get in touch. Yes, you can. And I'm through the website. But also get in touch with me after the show, and I'll make sure I get copies out to you guys.
Oh, that's awesome.
Very cool.
Tonight.
Hell yeah.
So listen, guys, and of course, Aaron Jimkowski of Craft by Under My Host, yes. Which is so weird. Plug.
Last,
plug
but
for
definitely
us.
Definitely not least.
No, not least. thank you guys for joining us. I feel like this is probably the most that I've talked on I didn't have everybody else joining in, but you guys think it is a great product.
It really
it was very easy to talk about. We'll talk to everybody soon. You guys follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram.
I can remember.
Undermyhost.com.
Thank you so much, everyone. I really appreciate the opportunity. This was awesome and so much fun.
It was fun. And then thank you for joining us. Thanks, guys. Everybody, thanks for joining us the first time, the second time, the third time. And we'll talk to everybody soon.
All right. Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Have
bye-bye.
A great night.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Friday night.